Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Saturday, the 4th of June. Now, first thing I should mention is that yesterday's comment of the day has now been posted, dated Saturday, of course. I was actually about halfway through when I realized that we had tickets to Rossini's Il Turco in Italia at the Royal Opera House, starring Cecilia Bartoli, and I certainly wasn't going to miss that. So I thought, well, right, instead of putting up a partial comment, I'll come in and do the whole thing on Saturday, get it right, hopefully, and I hope it's worth it. It does contain three terrific reports, which I was very pleased to comment on. Enjoyed doing so. And as for the opera, well, that was pretty good, but Buffo, you know, it was too long. I can listen to Wagner all night, provided it's not Der Meistersingers, but Buffo needs to be short and punchy. Okay, now, first, this is the big picture long-term outlook, but first I want to capture the highlights here, and there are some very, very important ones. And the main one here is that we had a key day reversal in the U.S. NASDAQ index. Now, I regard that very much as being a lead indicator in here, so that's a warning shot across the bows at minimum here for this stock market rally. The other item is that we had an even... Now, when I said that NASDAQ 100, that was on the futures contract. We didn't get that occurring on the... On the actual indices themselves, but the futures had opened stronger prima. They opened pre-market, have longer trading hours. Just want to clarify that. Now, we also had a considerably bigger key day reversal in the U.S. Treasury bonds, and I do think that's really quite important. I'd been looking for a reaction, as you probably know from Thursday's audio and earlier comments, and this was certainly a big, important dynamic. A tradable signal, very much a tradable signal in my view, as is the NASDAQ signal. Elsewhere, well, I think that's the main item. Well, no, copper exploded up to new high ground now, so the supply and elasticity trades are very much alive and well, and I think we can really forget all about that slowdown in China, and maybe a slowdown in speculation in Shanghai or Beijing property, but not in the overall economy, or not all that much. It would be very much of a minor growth slowdown rather than anything threatening a recession. Okay, now let's go back and pick up the stock market cycle. Now, you know that my overall view that Wall Street's in a secular bear market, long defined by me as a generational long process of P/E ratio contraction and rising yields, as people realize that this is not the 1990s markets, and they gradually become disillusioned and are willing to pay less for equities. So gradually, valuations improve, not in linear fashion, but in rolling waves, and become exceptionally attractive, and from that point onwards, then we slowly enter the next secular, once in a generational long secular bull market. And as far as Wall Street is concerned on a short-term basis, well, one of my important hypotheses for this year has been that the excellent two-year rally that we saw basically from March 2003, that would not really extend beyond the end of the first quarter of 2005, and indeed it extended through February for most indices, not the NASDAQ, and then a number of stock markets saw quite sharp shakeouts and subsequently rebounded. Now, one of my, again, another hypothesis in here was that whether we saw a ranging period in stock markets or a decline down at least into the, say, well into the October period, this year, later this year, would depend partly on what happened with Treasury bonds. In other words, if they continued to rally, that would be supportive of equity prices. And because it would indicate that investors were not fearful of, in terms of rising interest rates, were looking beyond rising interest rates to lower rates. And another factor eludes me for the moment, but it will no doubt come back as I carry on. And currently, I think that we're seeing. Oh, the other factor was liquidity. If we had really quite abundant global liquidity, that would support equity prices. Whereas if we had a squeeze, that would really be quite negative. Well, I've never been of the view that we were going to see a big squeeze, but equally, I think that during this rally, for a recent rally that we have seen in both treasury bonds and other government bonds around the world, and also in stock markets, that investors really have underestimated the extent to which the Fed is likely to go on raising interest rates. But we will see, as someone said. Now, what about this very moment? Also, pick up the short-term theme. I think it's risky here. I'm glad I added to my NASDAQ shorts last or earlier in the week. And I'm glad that I also opened an initial treasury bond short position. I increased that position by about 50%. So I think that the risk is to the downside in stock markets right now. Now, how am I going to play it? Well, I've got a number of short positions. I may increase some of those. The other side of the coin is, do I take out some of my long positions, some of which have done very, very well? We've got that JP Morgan Fleming India Trust that I've been banging on about. That's gone right back up to its highs. Also, that's one of my co-favorite long-term positions. The other one, that Investec Global Energy Fund. Am I going to let that go, or would I let some of my gold shares? Well, the short answer on that is no. And I had said I had said a month or two ago that I might well sell some of those positions if I saw a good rally, particularly among the Asian market positions. But frankly, I'm willing to ride out a correction if that's what occurs in the India fund or in other positions, should Wall Street head south. And if Wall Street were to head south with a vengeance, which it might, I have little doubt that that would drag down just about everything else in its wake. But also, the things that I like most, or if you have my long-term positions in Asian emerging markets mainly, and in the supply and elasticity trades, I think they will bounce back very rapidly, as we've seen recently. So I'm certainly not going to be selling my Investec Global Energy Fund, and I'm going to hold on to my India fund in here. And partly also because I suspect that here, I don't want to be complacent, but I don't think that the stock market's downside risk is huge. I'm not looking for a collapse, in other words, but I would not be surprised if we had a weak phase on Wall Street, of a greater or lesser degree, again carrying into the October period. And if I'm wrong on that, I will take an additional pasting in some of my hedge short positions, but have the consolation of seeing my long positions do extremely well. One of the reasons for not expecting a big downturn is that I think that there's still too much liquidity sloshing around in the system for that. Okay, also mining shares. I think these look just extremely attractive. In here, the gold shares are, I think, really quite undervalued. And how many people have you said, have you heard say, and these are, I'm talking about analysts, pundits, and so on, that the resources boom was over, Well, I think there's a little bit of wishful thinking in that. And certainly the move in oil, I see no evidence that that's over. We've got a top testing rally underway at the moment. We don't have a backwardation, though, which means that we may well see oil run into some resistance beneath the high. Not significant resistance in my view, and the reaction lows are higher, as you'll be able to see on that chart that I posted today. The backwardation in copper is huge. There's a major shortage there, and we see shortages in most other industrial metals. All right, now again, getting back to the big long-term theme, the two ones that I like the most in terms of equity markets, well, I've mentioned it already in this audio, supply and elasticity, mainly applying to industrial resources, all industrial resources. They're scarce relative to the demand. But the most intriguing ones are in energy, because the energy, once it's consumed, once that oil is consumed, or once that uranium is used by a power station, it is no longer recyclable, at least not as a usable form of energy. Whereas the metals, they pretty much go on forever. They are constantly recycled, although I wouldn't be surprised if we get many years of shortages, because we've got all this urban building going on in China and India and elsewhere, and that's just going to continue for decades. In addition to all the other demand that we have from all the other countries around the world, and most of these producers are sort of blinking with surprise and relief at the gains that they've actually seen, but they remember the old cycles, and where they would step up production and then be hurt, because there would be surpluses and prices would fall all the way back down and so on. Just look at the consumption trends, and that really is different this time. All right, moving on to government bonds. I think they're really dangerous. I've said this before. I think that really they're an accident waiting to happen. I think people have been way too complacent regarding the risks of inflation. They're focusing on what they want to see, or they're and including the government statistics, which I just don't think are realistic. Just look at it this way: if you've got these resources prices pushing upwards, do we think that won't that this and we see asset inflation everywhere. Look at what's happened with property prices. Look at what's happening with art prices. We're seeing all this asset inflation taking place. Do we really think, and does anybody seriously think, that that won't eventually filter through to some consumer price inflation? Now, this cycle is just the opposite of the 1970 cycles in terms of leads and lags, as Mark Farber and others have pointed out. For instance, in the 1970s, first we had to con and it started in the late 60s. First we had consumer price inflation, and then that led on to asset inflation. Well, there's no reason in the world why the asset inflation today won't lead on to consumer price inflation. As a matter of fact, there are many good reasons why it will. It will not be possible not to eventually pass on increases in prices of raw materials, for instance. And then in terms of services, we see the extent to which those costs have exploded. If you pay the household bills, there are all sorts of inflationary pressures. And just think of all the money that's been pushed around the system by central banks, all the newly created money. And this big U.S. trade deficit, what actually happens there? The fallacy is that a lot of people have said quite wrongly that the U.S. is consuming the rest of the world's savings. Well, that's nonsense. If a Chinese company, for instance, receives $20 million, What does it do? It saves that money. First, it converts it into renminbi, and then the government receives the 20 million dollars. And what the government does to supply the renminbi is print the money. It newly prints the money. So as that U.S. Deficit continues, that and compels these other foreign central banks that are developing the surpluses to go on printing money. And you know the extent of the credit creation that we've seen from the Fed in recent years, which is effectively the electronic printing press. So we've got all this capital sloshing around the system, unprecedented levels. We only have fiat currencies, and do people seriously think we're not going to have another long-term inflationary cycle? Well, many do. But my view, which I've stated over and over again, is that we are in the early years of another major inflationary cycle. That doesn't mean inflation is going to go roaring ahead. It starts very, very slowly. We get pockets of disinflation and deflation even continuing, and we'll see those particularly in manufacturing. But the inflationary pressures are building. And what that means, how that will actually play out, and this takes me back to the bonds, is that we are not going to see interest rates fall as low as they fell in 2001 and 2002. We won't see that, I don't think, for any other country. Now, interest rates haven't changed in Japan, but they're unable to move them any lower. And they will eventually lift them. But for everyone else, for every other country, my feeling is in, and we may well be nearer the end of this cycle of higher interest rates. Certainly, that's true in terms of the UK and Euroland, where many people are screaming for interest rate cuts. But what I'm actually saying, in addition to the fact that I think that the Fed will probably move rates up more than the 25 to 50 basis points that most people have seen as maximum recently, but whatever, I'm saying that in the next downward phase for interest rates in Europe, in the USA, in Asia, that they will not fall back to Asia ex-Japan, they will not fall back to the lows that we saw in 2001, 2002. And then thereafter, when interest rates move up in the next cycle, a few years, a year or two later, that they will move above the highs that we will see in the peak of the current rising interest rate cycle that we're in as those inflationary pressures are gradually building. So we'll get a series of higher troughs for interest rates over the years, and a series of higher highs. I'm talking about short-term interest rates, but that will cause a very similar reaction in long-term interest rates more often than not. So I think that anybody who holds bonds, long-dated government bonds, is going to pay a big price in terms of loss of purchasing power due to inflationary pressures. I'd much rather short bonds on rallies, and that's the way I've been playing it and will continue to play it. Moving on to the currency markets. Now, I've been saying for months that I don't see any evidence that the dollar's rally is over. That's still the case today, but I'm seeing some signs, less in the currencies, but in some of the things that respond to currencies, some evidence that we are really a lot closer to the dollar's high than we are to its low. And then there's some of these sort of general warning signs that we've been that we're getting. Some of these contrary, I should restate that. Some of these contrarian signals that we're getting. For instance, I noticed while briefly watching a financial television program that someone said that all of the major investment banks, these are the top big currency players, and they listed them all. I'll just mention a few, and they had Goldman's, they had Morgan's, they had Citigroup, Merrill Lynch, and so on, that all of them since April have revised up their expectations for the US dollar and lowered their expectations for the year. In other words, most of them were expecting by the end of the year For euro dollar to reach 140. Now they're saying 130. In other words, they become more bullish of the dollar. Well, part of the reason for that was that they could not go on with their bearish forecast while the dollar was breaking out on the upside, the dollar index was breaking out on the upside, and the euro was continuing to weaken. Now, I feel, again, I have to say, I still don't see any clear technical evidence that the dollar's rally is over, but I'm getting behavioral clues and some technical signs from other markets that it's late in the stage, therefore this rally is nearly over. We might get a little bit of a burst on the upside, but in terms of the time cycle and the overall move, I think we've seen the best of it by far. And I think we will, the next development that will occur, the next big move, is more likely to be a retest of the dollar's lows. And I suspect it'll probably go a little bit overall. But I've never been a dollar's going to collapse advocate. I've never had any truck with that view. And I've said that back down at 80, and the dollar index is currently above 180, is it currently above 88? But back down around 80, which it almost reached at the beginning of the year. We're into the historic support, and I don't expect it to go all that much below that level overall. But the interesting, and I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see the dollar ranging in this area for several years as part of a long gradual bottoming out process. But we'll almost certainly see new lows during that overall bottoming out process. But as I say, no big additional extension to the bear market that we've seen to date. Now, the interesting thing that's taking place here right now is that we've seen precious metals firming up, or some of them at any rate, mainly silver and platinum, moving very, very strongly. And while and they are very strongly correlated to, or very closely correlated to, the US dollar. And that is interesting. It certainly says that some big money is saying, you better start to establish positions here now, because the chances are the dollar isn't going to go a whole lot higher. And once the dollar starts to weaken again, you might not see these things for dust. And I think that's very likely to be the case. So, I hold a lot of silver. I've let some of it go recently during the rally as I continue with my baby steps program of buy low, sell high. I certainly am well represented there, and I bought some gold recently. Again, and I've got platinum, and I've got gold shares, and so on. And I think this is an interesting, very interesting area right now. Now, we may have to be patient if the dollar rallies for a few more weeks, let alone months, and that has to be a possibility. But again, having said that, we're closer to the top of this rally cycle. Than the bottom. I think really the precious metals area is extremely is extremely interesting, and it's very out of favor at the moment. Then look at all those charts of gold in other currencies. Now, once we start seeing gold break out on the upside against the Swiss franc, against the euro, against the yen, then we will have entered the second of several stages of this secular bull market in precious metals that I've been forecasting, and it will be more powerful than the first stage, which was almost entire. Well, not an the gold price has appreciated against all currencies, but it's been mainly against the US dollar until quite recently. But if you go back to the lows in 2001, say it's appreciated against all currencies. Okay, on to the price of crude oil. I mentioned that that does not have a backwardation. A backwardation may develop. If it does, then we're going to see new highs for sure. that backwardation comes back again. We currently have a contango saying no immediate shortage, but the price has risen again on supply fears, and certainly this is a powerful secular bull market overall. And well, as I say, we may see some resistance up near the higher side, near that $58-$59 level. We may. I don't think there's big downside risk in the price of crude oil, and the next big move is going to be on the upside. I do feel that the intermediate, that predictable intermediate term correction that I talked about is over, and you know I've been saying that for a while, that I wouldn't be surprised to see the oil price find support in that $46-$47 range that it reached, and at the speed with which it's come back up, or persistence with which it's come back up, does make me feel, as I say, that that medium-term correction is over. Lastly, in here, well, I should mention a little bit more about the industrial metals. I had been a bit concerned that there might be a pause in buying from China. Quite possibly there was. And also those patterns, those big broadening patterns on top of the gains that had already been seen, and the shakeouts in stock markets that had worried me a bit. But I wish that I had rolled my last copper position forward and my last lead position forward. I mean, this is, as you know, copper's gone gangbusters in here again. This is a secular bull market. It's got a lot further to go on the long term. Yes, these metals will be volatile, and it takes nerves to trade them, and I don't trade them in that big a way, because really they're very prone to these bungee jumps, partly because of that LME system, which I've mentioned before, and I won't go into any detail on that now, but they are prone to these bungee jumps when you get, particularly when you get a gathering of stop orders underneath a rising market. And the strategy that I've advocated, which is an unnerving one, is you wait for the bungee jump and then you buy. But of course it feels like a gamble when one does that, but it has been rewarding on every occasion, and would always be the case, but it's likely to be remain the case far more often than not during a secular bull market. And I think to get a major rout, in other words, a huge decline, much bigger than we've seen in recent years in those industrial metals, and for them to stay down, we would have to see a global recession. And I'm just not forecasting that at this stage. Now, lastly, the grains. They look interesting. They're not anything like the industrial commodities in terms of supply and elasticity, because you can get a sudden production problem. The fundamentals can change overnight, deteriorating weather conditions, and that can damage a crop. Prices soar, but in the next growing season for the major agricultural commodity countries, then they just increase production all over again. So prices tend to fall back down towards their historic lows. I think that's certainly the pattern that we've seen for decades, and I think we'll probably go on seeing it. But they're on the lower side of those ranges, and this is the period when it's interesting, when the markets are prone to weather jitters, as we've seen recently. I play that selectively, and I'm still long the corn and soybeans, which I bought more recently, as you may know. And folks, I think that's pretty much it in terms of the global coverage. So just enjoy the rest of your weekend, and I look forward to Monday.